Hello and welcome to the LRM podcast, sponsored by Adrian Flux Insurance. I'm Martin Dominey and today I'm here with Alistair Cusick, LRM contributor and photographer to the stars. How are you getting on, Alistair?
Not too bad, thank you. Not too bad. Good. Tired after shooting all day with you, but never mind.
Well, yeah, we're out on the road again today, aren't we? Getting another feature in the bag for the magazine.
Yep. Always a good day at work.
Absolutely. Always good fun to be around Land Rovers. So thought we'd just take this opportunity to have a catch up with you, really, and see, get a bit of your background in Land Rovers and shooting for Land Rover Monthly, as you must be probably one of the most longest term contributors.
And I think I'm the oldest thing in the cupboard at the minute, yes.
Truly part of the furniture.
I've been I did my first freelance job with LRM in. I did a photography degree and had to do a major project at the end of it, which I did a book about portraits of people who own Land Rovers. So I did a load of the normal sort of owners with all sorts of stuff. But also towards the end of the book, I did people who made their living from from Land Rovers. So I did Jeff Miller, one of the Range Rover engineers from 1970, and big chap in sort of history of Land Rover. James Taylor, historian.
Everyone knows James, yep.
Richard Hale Thomas, the first guy to start a Land Rover magazine, which was Land Rover owner and then LRM. Nick Dimbleby, the photographer, the Land Rover photographer. Pete Wilford, the caricaturist.
He does cracking cartoons.
Yeah,
absolutely brilliant.
Dave Mitchell, first guy to start an off-road course in the UK. Anyway, finished the degree. A couple of weeks after I finished, James Taylor called me up and said, can you do a job with me for Richard for LRM? He'd recently started LRM a year before, which I did. We went down to Dunsfold and shot the 100-inch prototypes.
Wow, quite a good kickoff to your Land Rover photography career then, I suppose.
Wasn't a bad day in the office, yeah.
Sounds splendid. You keep meaning to show me that book as well, and I've not yet seen it, but I'd love to have a look.
Yeah, and it's a good bit of fun. That book's got me every bit of work I've got to this day.
Wow. You must have, got off on the right foot and showed off your quality of work pretty early on, which is always good. So, obviously, you're still doing cracking features for Land Rover Monthly to this very day, including the one we shot today. And we're back shooting again tomorrow. What is it? You obviously own a couple of Land Rovers yourself. What is it? How did you get into them?
We had Discoveries as family cars growing up. Discoveries are a key thing. I think they got lots of enthusiasts into the sort of brand. I read Land Rover magazines when I was growing up and read stories about Gary Pusey buying a Range Rover and going off-road. I'd always liked Range Rovers and always wanted one. I'm very lucky to have one now. Just sort of fell into it, I suppose, really liking them. I like cars growing up, but Land Rovers particularly. I did my work experience at school, 2 weeks in vehicle operations in Solihull. That was a fantastic fortnight. The Camel Trophy fleet had just come back into the compound because I was smaller and younger than the guys in the workshop. They sent me up there, passing them down the tyres and Pioneer tools and stuff like that. LSE had just come out. My treat at the end of the fortnight was 2 hours around the jungle track with one of the guys who was training on the next Camel Trophy. It was brilliant.
What an amazing time to be around Land Rover with all
that going on. Yeah, and I was very lucky. So got into photography, did the degree, thought I'd like to do more with them. So that's how it started.
Fair enough, yeah. I mean, sounds like an absolute... people would kill to be in that position around the Camel Trophy sort of era and... classic Range Rover, which of course you own. What now? You've got your soft dash.
Yeah, I got a 1995 soft dash Vogue SE in Biarritz blue and Tahiti blue if it's a metro, but we don't talk about that. That's really nice. It's just like a 25th but a slightly different blue, and just grey leather, ex-factory car, the factory registration. Yeah, I've had it since 2011.
Oh, wow. Quite what? 13 years?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And that's, tell us a bit about how you came to buy that car, because people love hearing buying stories.
I had a Porsche 911 at the time, and I really enjoyed it. It was a brilliant car, but you couldn't do much with the spanners on it, and I quite liked rattling spanners. Although I hadn't done that much of it on my own cars, I had to say, I've done bits and bobs, but I wanted to do a bit more than I could with the 911. We'd happened to see a friend of mine in the Lake District, just to go and pop and say hi. We'd been up in the 911, which I bought 2 weeks after we had our first child, I have to say.
But that's not a decision many people would make.
No,
got away with that quite well.
It was fully authorised. It was fine.
All right, signed off.
But my friend took us out to lunch in his 200 TDI Discovery head. And after being in the 911, the Discovery was a revelation. We sitting up high, loads of room for us and the child. My other half had never been in a Discovery before, so it was like, you know, a real light bulb moment. And I came home from that thinking, yeah, I'd really like a Range Rover or something like that. But I really wanted a Discovery. And it just so happened a pre-production one came up for sale, which Roy Preston pipped me to because I was away working in France. The eBay auction ended. And I thought, oh, I've missed out on that one. So I just looked around what was around, and I spotted my Range Rover Adroit, which just at a usual second-hand car dealer.
So Roy Preston is president of Project J Owners Club.
Yeah, Project J Preservation Group.
That is the one, yeah, specialising in the early Discovery. So it's no doubt that he beat you to the eBay auction, really.
Yeah, no, he's the right man for it. And they've since restored it. It was a left-hand drive five-door prototype. Roy's a great guy. I love all our early disco group and everything like that. It's fantastic. But yeah, so I found the Range Rover, went and looked at it, opened the door. The guy gave me the keys and I said, that's fine. Opened the door. The first thing I did was smell inside of it. And then I got on my knees and looked underneath and checked it all out. And he said straight away, well, you obviously know what you're looking for.
You get his back up a little bit, do you think? Or was he all right with you poking and prodding it?
No, but this was before the era when they really became popular, sort of bother the mass market. So he'd bought it off a mate, I think. He was a dealer, but hadn't done anything to it. I opened the door to smell it, you know, because you can usually smell if it's got water problems, and it should have that sort of factory Dunsfold smell about it, all of those volatile compounds coming out the carpets and the glues.
Yeah,
it is a thing.
Not disgusting, damp, danky carpet.
So I checked it out, it was fine. Took it for a road test, it was fine. The air suspension worked. Knocked some money off because he wanted a bit of work. Drove it home, serviced it, and it instantly felt like it had another seven cylinders from when I test drove it. Obviously, hadn't been serviced for a little while, but I mean, today it's our sort of, or for the past decade, it's been our family car to go away, and I've done boot floor, rear cross member, front end was rebuilt, power steering pump, it's had the woods inside re-veneered, it's on its second headlining inside, alternator, water pump, valley gasket.
In the grand scheme of things, though, for a car of that age, it's nothing.
It's nothing I'm fazed by. No. What would I have lost in depreciation buying a modern one, and how many would I have had since then? But it's such a fantastic car. I've been from the Isle of Skye to Cornwall with it on holiday. We went to the Isle of Skye after we'd finished restoring it. And to this day, it's probably the best thing I've ever done in a car. And I've done many, driven at 200 miles an hour and done all sorts of stuff. But yeah.
There you go. We're always saying on the podcast, get out and use your Land Rover. And Isle of Skye to Cornwall doesn't get much better than that.
I haven't used it in Cornwall lately because it's just a bit of a naff drive down there. But it's the car I've always wanted. So yeah.
It's a gorgeous example. And no doubt you'll see it at an event at some point, LRM Live, if we can get you back there this coming year. It depends. You came into Series 1 this year.
I came in the Range Rover this year, Series 1 last year.
Beg your pardon. That's right. Yeah. Got loads of attention on the LRM stand, didn't it?
It was the only Range Rover, I think, bar another one. It was really shocked to see, but they're getting quite rare.
Very, very nice indeed. And of course, you just mentioned briefly there your Series 1, which is a sort of patina resto.
So I've got a 1957 Series 1, which I've known since 1999. I wrote to LRM as a photography student saying I'm looking for interested members if anyone wants to be photographed, or readers rather, for my photography degree project. The end of the first day then that came out, someone got in touch with me from the Lake District, Phil Barry, a really good friend of mine to this day, and he had the Series 1. I went up and met him. He had lots of other cars as well. I shot him and five friends, but at the end of the day, he said, oh, I must show you this other Series 1 I've got. I bought it from the local Westmoreland Gazette from a line ad, and he called up the day that came out. He was something like the seventh person to see it that night. And there was 27 people called off the back of the advert.
27?
Something crazy like that, yeah. It's a big number. It had come straight off from working in a private forest. It went to a farm in Watermillock, brand new, for a couple of years. Then it went to a private forest just outside Langdale, outside Ambleside, where it stayed till 1996. And Phil bought it straight out of there with 22,000 miles on, I think, or 20,000 miles on it. He used it for a year or two and laid it up. We went for a drive in it that night. We went around the lakes the year later in it. It would have been 2000. And I photographed it on slide film, but he laid it up the year after that. Anyway, fast forward. He'd been talking about selling it, hadn't really used it since then. Land Rover Reborn were looking for vehicles. Phil called them up saying, "I've got a few." They came and looked at it. It was a bit rusty. There's two sides to the story. Mike Bishop will say it was too old, the rusty one. It was too rusty for them. Phil didn't really, in the end, didn't really want to see it restored and all of the patina lost. So I said, "Phil, I'll buy it off you and I'll just restore it underneath and keep the panels as they are," which is what I did.
Yeah.
So I picked it up in 2016 or 17. I picked it up January 2017, trailered it straight to a workshop. I spent another 12 months restoring it with a friend of mine, James Holmes, fantastic Land Rover technician. And yeah, we drove it back on the road exactly a year to the day we drove it into the workshop.
Wow, that's good going.
Yeah.
That is good going. And like I said earlier on in our sort of through the podcasts, yours is the only to date, yours was the first Series 1 I've ever driven. You very kindly let me have a go when had a sort of day out in the Peak District, and what an absolutely lovely thing it is to drive, because you've taken the time to make everything just right. It's not, you know, we were talking on the way here about the pedal heights, things like that. You've made everything just so it's the little things that you've done have come together to make it a lovely driving experience.
I think so. I mean, you know, I'm no expert. I'm just an enthusiast, but be both the cars. I thought if I was going to have one, I want to try and have the best one I can. You don't have to have a concourse restoration to have a good car. It could just be a well-serviced car used for off-roading. I don't off-road in mine. Other people have done that. Once you've spent time restoring them, I think it's nice just to enjoy them. But yeah, so once I got the car back on the road, I did spend quite a lot of time working through everything to make sure everything was working to as much tolerance, tight tolerance as I could. So yes, set the pedal heights. Like the action of the pedal, so they work really nicely, you know, clutch adjustment, carburetor adjustment, everything I could to make sure it could drive as best as it can. It's quite an experience anyway.
It is lovely. It is really, really nice. And yeah, credit to you, really. And actually, like you said, it's sort of the, you've got the sort of yin and yang. Your Range Rover is nice, beautiful paintwork, lovely leather. It's a luxurious car. It's quiet. It's a powerful V8. And then at the other end, you've got your restored Series 1, which is not powerful, but it wears all it's in its work clothes, so to speak.
Yes, it had a new bulkhead, but every other panel I've just cleaned up, it's got, 67 trips around the sun of worn the paint, through in places. But no, I just love it. It's like the purest Land Rover hit I think you can get if you want. You know, I don't need to go far in it. I don't need to go fast, but it's just fantastic.
Even the wheels, you were telling me, the original wheels haven't been painted.
No, they're brown. They've corroded to brown. The paint's gone off them, but I just wire-wheeled them back and I've left them as they are. So
it is a lovely, lovely thing. And actually, I was thinking earlier, when I had it in my mind that I was going to ambush you and do this podcast, when we pulled up earlier to get some fuel and coffee, we were really sort of enthusing over a silver Discovery 2 that we saw. And if you were to add a Land Rover to your fleet, what do you think you'd go for?
That was a very nice, facelift Disco 2.
On the
alloys, your wheels, really sharp in silver. They look fantastic. That's a nice car. I could go for a Disco 2. My guilty pleasure has always been a P38. I've always fancied a P38.
Okay.
I've never been brave enough. I've got my hands full with what I've got. 392 is a great car. I love a NAS 110, NAS 90. Not really going to get one of those in the UK.
You build your own maybe, but yeah.
I'm
kind of with you on that. Steve will berates me every time I mention the L322, but to me, the early L322, I think that's... It's on my hit list.
It's a good car, but I don't think it's a perfect car. You could argue the diesel engine is not quite right. And you could also probably argue perhaps about the petrol as well. The later cars are much better. The diesel V8s, I think, is the car that should be.
Yeah, as a daily user, I think the TD V8's hard to beat. The M57, legendary engine, reliability, fantastic. But yeah, just lacking a bit maybe in an L322.
It's a bit like a V8 in a classic. It's just the right engine. For that car, you know, a diesel, a TD V8 L322 is the right engine for that.
Mm. Okay, so if you had to pick one though, what would you go for?
Oh, to add to the fleet?
Yeah.
Oh.
Money, no object. You could have whatever you wanted.
Oh, Disco One, I think that would be my ultimate one. I just love a really tidy Disco One. Yeah. Perhaps a Camel Trophy Disco One.
Good shout. Yeah, I could get on board with that. So obviously, like I say, longest serving LRM contributor. What you must have some memorable adventures you can perhaps share with us. Maybe some misadventures, some mishaps, some good times and some bad times.
Well, there's always things going on. I mean, the story, you know, we go out to get a story for the magazine, Words and Pictures. But there's always a second story, and that's the story of putting things together.
We're proud to partner with Adrian Flux, an insurance broker that specialises in covering all types of Land Rovers, including classic, ex-military, modified and Q-plated models. Adrian Flux offers a range of optional extras to make the policy your own and can provide cover for off-roading, green laning, agreed value and build-up cover. Plus, they even offer a discount of up to 15% for Owners Club members. Simply search Adrian Flux Land Rover Insurance for more information, or call them directly on 0344 728 0417 for a quote.
Things always go a lot wrong because that's sort of life, really. And there's sort of massive mechanical mishaps. I've had stories from the 911 shoots, but cars down hillsides or stuff like that. But
Not ideal with in the Porsche. Well, not ideal with anything, but certainly, yeah. Barreling a Porsche down a hillside, not something you want to.
We did it was a shoot with James Taylor with an LSE Range Rover. We did soft and hard dash LSEs, I think, together. One of the cars we took out from Lambourne, and the roads had been flooded just outside the village. So we were doing a tracking shot. I was at the back window of the LSE, looking forward to the driver as we drove through this flood, and I'm concentrating so much on the shot, I never noticed there's a car coming towards me, this young boy racer. And as he passed our car, the two sort of passing bow waves, well, it came over the bonnet of the LSE, over the window, and through the window I was in. So I leapt back as we took the shot to see this wall of water come right over this sort of beige leather interior.
Oh, no.
The owner was fine about it. He wasn't worried one bit, but there seemed a lot more water than there was wind up hole.
Forces its way through. Oh, God. Yeah. Literally putting a dampener on your day.
But actually, yes, it was, yes.
Oh, crikey. A bit of a question, actually, and I've just thought of this, so you'd have to excuse me. A lot of people like taking pictures of their Land Rovers because they send them into LRM to a star in Month in Pictures, or yep, your pictures, depending on what we called it at the time. Three tips for taking a picture of your Land Rover. Go.
Three tips. I personally like to show them in a bit of an environment. So I like a bit of car and landscape. I think the environment should sort of reflect the car. And obviously they're a great sort of vehicle to get you anywhere. You could argue a car is about sort of freedom or represents freedom.
Yeah. We're pretty careful actually in LRM to sort of choose where we show vehicles, because the majority of car magazines, you see them on the road. And quite a lot of the time, that's the case in LRM as well, as people have got more precious with rebuilds and they don't necessarily want to go and get dirty. But where we can, like you say, environment is incredible, you know, makes so much of a difference.
Yeah, so I think you should put it in a place where the car looks at home. That might be a Range Rover in the city at night or something like that. But equally, like a car on a green lane or a great mountain pass. I love taking my Range Rover. We've been on holiday to the lakes a lot, and I'll often sneak out in the evening and shoot it at the top of a pass at sunset.
Almost like you say, brochure shots. It's that sort of ambient.
Yeah, a really nice setting, really nice lighting on it. It'll all come together really quickly, but I really enjoy that. Just park the car up in the right place, waiting for the light. I really enjoy just sitting looking at the car while that's happening. It's really good.
Cool.
So yeah, environment would be one. Like in the magazine, we're always sort of creating manufacturing excitement really for shots, but action shots, I like a good wading shot.
Yeah.
But it all depends on a bow wave. You need to get someone just to get a really nice bow wave. I personally like it just when they just fold the water forward just a tiny little bit, not really pushing it forward. You just get this lovely little rise, really low down, long lens water shot would be good. But yeah, clean car. I do like a clean car. They don't have to be clean, but I prefer them clean. But if you're going to take pictures of your own car, I'd take it somewhere sort of scenic that suits the vehicle, a nice green lane that you like. Find a nice bit, you know, where the sun's setting, get the sun in just the right place. If you've got a nice clean car, and good paint work can help as well.
Okay.
If you want to take a nice sort of hero shot of your car, clean it well, take it somewhere nice, and just wait till the sun has just gone over the horizon. That would be my go-to.
Excellent. And if when you've done that, please do email your photo over to Land Rover Monthly, editorial at lrm.co.uk, and we'll put it in Month in Pictures.
Don't go too wide angle on your lens. Yeah, that would be my other tip.
Oh, right.
I can end up too wide angle and it'll distort the car. So don't do that if you can.
There we go. You heard it from straight from the horse's mouth.
But you can do it on your phone as well. You can do it on a phone if you haven't got a proper camera, see?
We do get a reasonable mixture, actually, of people who use their phone. It's so handy to have it, so convenient. But also, you know, there's quite a lot of budding photographers in the Land Rover world, so it's great to see what they send over as well. And I guess with anything comes with practice.
It does come with practice, yeah. But, yeah, take the car somewhere relevant, have it doing something. Just one more. Is the stock phrase of a photographer. Your other half will get sick of just one more. Yeah.
It's experimenting with different things as well, I suppose, isn't it? But we tend to use, in the trade, I suppose, your static photos of the car parked up, so interior, exterior, and then things like tracking shots where it's taken from one vehicle to another, which is sort of like what you see on TV, I guess.
Yeah, they'll have a vehicle for that where they'll be strapped into the back just for sort of safety reasons. But often it's not going as quick as you think for that.
No, quite. You can
get smoke and mirrors.
A lot of movement that not much speed.
Yeah.
Same with panning, isn't it? Where you take it from the side and the vehicle's all blurry, but
yeah,
the vehicle's sharp, but the background's blurry.
Yeah, so you stand back and the car drives past. You want to get the car sharp and some spinny wheels and background if you can. It's often, it's a bit of smoke and mirrors. Often it looks like it's going really quick, where it's just second gear sometimes.
We don't want to give too much away.
Yeah.
Next time you're looking through the magazine and you see a photo of a vehicle that looks like it's doing 70 miles an hour, it probably isn't. So sorry to shatter that illusion. Oh, good stuff. So, we're actually at Brit Park today, which is good. We've been here a few times, haven't we?
To choose various things. It's always a treat.
Defender buying guide was one that springs to mind. Shots for that. That was earlier in 2024.
Yeah, no, love visiting the workshop and seeing Steve and what he's up to. He's a really good technician.
The most patient man in the world, I think.
Yeah, no, it's a lovely facility as well. Yeah.
It's great to be in a place where you can tell everyone's into it. Everyone's
absolutely, yeah.
Proper Land Rover to the core, which is lovely.
Yeah.
If you haven't heard our podcast with the managing director of Brit Park, Paul Myers. It's a few podcasts ago, so I go back and have a listen to that because you might learn some stuff. Because people are a bit closed-minded about Brit Park, but when you understand what they actually do, it makes you see it in a whole different light. And the place is enormous, isn't it?
Yeah, I use plenty of Brit Park stuff on my series often. You know, it's the only place you can get it. But you can also get it around the world if you need it at all.
Yeah, exactly. It truly is global. Cool. So you also contribute quite heavily to the technical section of the magazine.
For the last sort of decade or more. I think the first thing I covered was restoring the wood when I got the classic.
Oh, the veneer.
Re-veneering it, yeah, with a guy there, all old words, world skills. That was good. I've done everything or had sight and covered it. I mean, if I can do something, I'd like to think I can show a reader how to do it because, you know, I haven't been sort of trained in it. I'm just, it's enthusiasm, you know.
Yeah, no, it's more and more difficult to sort of, well, it depends what job you're doing in the tech section, I guess. getting that across clearly and concisely to people who are reading it at home is quite an art in itself.
It is a skill, because you've got to share exactly the part that you're working on, but you have to give it a bit of context, because otherwise it's just a bolt in a random piece of metal.
It could be anything.
Yes, I really enjoy that. And I know people have used the stuff to do stuff. I've done everything. I've covered every step of my series one that we did, and also things like reconditioning wiper motors. We've done carburetor rebuilds.
Yeah, we work quite closely with Ed to make sure we get a decent variety of stuff that kind of applies to as many people as possible.
Yeah, it's a tricky balance to get, because you have to find someone doing that work in the right way.
Sure. Yeah, well, I mean, you're fairly central in the country, aren't you? You're based sort of near Birmingham, so you've got reasonable links to places. I know we do a fair bit with Ian Bourne at IRB.
I have done, yeah. He is very good. Very good and very patient with us. We covered Chris McCormack's 110 being rebuilt. And having the engine going back into it. We've done all sorts of things. I'm trying to think of some of the most interesting ones there. I've done welding guides at Kingsley with Range Rover Classics, how to learn how to weld and then apply to that. And I've done electrical things.
A recent one that springs to mind is wiring auxiliary lights, because a lot of people buy lights, fit them and wire them so they work, but when you actually apply yourself and do a really neat job of it, it completely like levels up the vehicle, like the fit and finish of stuff. And that's what we try to promote, really.
Yeah, exactly. And often if I try and cover something, I'll try and get all of these little tips and tricks so that you can do the job yourself, but also do it really well. Because actually doing it well, anyone can do a job badly.
Yeah.
But it makes the vehicle run better. It might be something silly, adjusting the pedal heights or something on my Series 1, for instance, but if it's you, the interface to it.
It's about, it's a bit cliche, but if you're doing a job, do it properly and do it to the best of your ability, because the overall picture, the overall vehicle will benefit hugely, whether you're restoring it fully, repairing it or upgrading it with things like lights.
But often that extra little bit you need to go to is probably only like 5 or 10% difference, and it might only take you another 20 minutes. It's not like you're taking 3 days to restore something.
Yeah, I completely agree. It's something I've been guilty of in the past, when you just want to get a job done and you sort of, not slapdash it, but you wish you'd spent that extra time looking back. Because in the moment when you're doing that job, whether it's taking half an hour or a whole day or even longer, you've got to live with that work for the rest of the time you own the vehicle. So you might as well do it, spend the extra time, put the extra effort in. Because every time you then look at that work that you've done, you'll be pleased with it and proud of it. So, yeah, that's...
If you did badly, you're revisiting it and you're having to do it properly anyway.
Exactly.
Lord on those.
Or every time you look at it, a bit inside of you dies because you wish you'd root that brake pipe a bit better or...
Brake pipes, yes. They give away to anyone's workmanship brake pipes.
I'm not a fan of brake pipes. But
often working out these sort of things and finding your way and researching it, for me, that's the joy in owning these cars. I'm just about to change the stereo in the Range Rover Classic. It's got a bit of a fearsome reputation for wiring, but I've already sort of drawn it out and everything. I don't know about electrics, but I'm researching it, and I know now what each feed does. I've identified every speaker wire, and it's working and confirmed it's working, identified what the problem is. You just got to take it down to the sort of first principles and work out from that.
Absolutely. It's fair to say that the soft dash Range Rover, I know from memory when I had mine a few years ago, there's actually quite a lot of crossover in the electrics between them and sort of like the Discovery 2.
Yeah.
There's a lot of technology and things like that used that they share. And the audio system, like unlike earlier classic Range Rovers, yours has got an amplifier in it. It's quite a high line system compared to sort of the basic.
Has a subwoofer as well, I'll have you.
La-dee-da.
But there's a lot of, funny enough, I've done a window regulator. The mechanism that makes the window goes up and down, it's a Disco 2 part number.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Wow, I never knew that. One thing I learned today as well is the door skins on, or the door frames on Discovery 1 and Range Rover Classic are in fact the same.
They are, because that's, they could do that affordably because they just changed the outer skin.
There you go. And you might be able to get some new door seals for yours, which you've thought.
Yeah, I found out. I thought you couldn't get door seals, but apparently you can. So I'm definitely going to try that.
Good stuff. The vehicle we shot today, we can't actually say too much about because this podcast will go out far sooner than the feature will. So
the word.
Shh, keep it quiet for now. But yeah, no, exciting times. And hugely privileged to work with a man with such sharp photography skills and someone who's been around the scene for so long. It's just,
what time's he coming, Martin? I'll go out.
Oh, you're too humble, Alistair. You are too humble. But no, really good fun. What's planned in the future then? What are you going to be up to with your couple of fine green oval specimens?
The Series 1 is waiting for the spring weather, the end of the rain. I'll probably do a couple of things on it. I can't think what I was going to do.
Bring it to Malvern.
I'm going to take it to Malvern. Yeah, I'd like to take it back to the Lake District next year to see the house, coincidentally owned by a Land Rover enthusiast, and photograph it back there. It's also got its sister car. The consecutive registration has been known. Mine's 426. 427 used to visit shows together with mine looking sort of ratty.
Oh, wow.
When it was previously owned. So the pair, but 427 was restored. So I know the owner of 427, so hopefully we'll get those two. Colin will bring that down and we'll hopefully get some time together there.
That'd be cool.
The Series 1's pretty solid and all there, touch wood. I'll go through all the fluids again next year before we go out. The Range Rover, I'm doing updating the radio for a Blaupunkt. Retro looking one with all modern.
Oh, I've seen them. They're sort of, yeah, ideal for a 90s car because they look standard, but actually loads more.
They did two versions, one that suits a sort of carburetor type car, one that suits more EFI era, but it's exactly like a Range Rover Classic Radio, the later one, so which is more temperamental than a teenage rock star. So I'm going to hopefully fit one of those. That's the next project. I've just done Headline for the second time. I'm going to investigate sound deadening for it just to see what I can do without sort of going too far. Man, there's always something you can think of.
Oh, yeah, they're even fully restored vehicles. They're of that age, don't they? There's always something you can improve or something that needs fettling. It seems like just yesterday, but it must have been months and months, maybe even a year ago now, I came over and sort of got in your way or gave you a hand with the exhaust manifold gaskets.
I think I was getting in your way, but yeah, we changed an exhaust manifold gasket, didn't we? Yeah,
it was good fun. Good fun. Good excuse to get the spanners out and have a little tinker.
Yeah, that's a massive part of it for me, I think. Yeah.
One thing you're another thing you're far too humble about is the condition of your Range Rover, because you say it's getting a bit cosmetically challenged in places, but I've yet to find a single bit that it needs. It needs love on it. I think it looks stunning still.
It's very tidy. Don't get me wrong. But yeah, you're always chasing. The problem is, the better you get with your work, I think you always look to like your standard of what's acceptable increases. So what you might have thought was okay then, you think, oh, I could do that a bit better now. So yeah, you're always sort of pushing what you can do next.
Okay, yeah, that's cool. That's fair to say. Yeah, I mean, I can't, like, it is a real, real pleasure because I obviously read your stuff before I came on board with LRM and I've always enjoyed it. It's always been something I've loved, looking at your photos and seeing the story behind these vehicles. And it's a pleasure to be able to come out and really get behind the scenes. And obviously sometimes we come out together and you'll get the photos and I'll write the story. Other times you have to go and do everything, which must be an awful lot to cram into one day.
Hey, it can be, but it's good seeing nice cars and Land Rover people.
That's one of the best things, I think, is meeting the people. And yeah, Everyone's so enthusiastic and sort of happy to show off what they've done, which is brilliant, and long may it continue.
Yeah.
So anything else you'd like to add?
Not really.
Fair enough. You don't realise, if you're listening at home, it's been a bit of a fight to get Alistair on this podcast because he's quite a humble and perhaps a private guy.
So I'm a quiet chap.
A quiet chap, yes. So, well, thank you for finally giving in to my begging, and no doubt people will catch up with and keep up with what you're doing on your Instagram, which is
at Alistair Cusick.
Very original, but effective. And what you get up to in Land Rover Monthly. So keep an eye on the pages and, of course, the tech section. And yeah, we'll look forward to seeing what's coming up in the coming year.
No worries.
Thanks for joining us, and we'll catch you on the next one.
Goodbye.